and welcome to this week's episode of House of Comments. My name's Emma Burnell. I'm a political journalist and I'm joined, as always, by Mark Thompson. Hello, Mark.
Hello.
And back off his paternity leave, I'm very delighted to welcome a slightly tired but very happy Nick Dennis. Hello, Nick.
Hi, Emma. Thanks.
And first of all, congratulations.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. It's an amazing thing. Anybody who is a parent will know how it's the most amazing but tiring thing in the world.
Well, I think possibly Theresa May might run you a close second on that one.
Yes, that's true. I mean, I have yet to run a Brexit process. So I can't compare it to fatherhood, but I imagine there are similarities.
So I think really there's only one story that we could possibly talk about this week, which is the Chequers deal and the already checkered history of the Chequers deal. How's that for a tongue twister? So, Nick, talk us through what was agreed at what seemed like a very successful summit at Chequers at the weekend.
Emma, when you said there's only one thing that we could talk about, I was really, really crossing my fingers and praying, said, does Emma want to talk about it's coming home? Does she want to talk about it's coming home? But yes, no.
Sadly, it was not coming home, and then it veered off to Croatia.
It did. So we're back to facing reality, really, which is
right. So
yes, which is a bit like the Brexit process. Nice segue, Nick. It's a bit like the Brexit process, isn't it? Really, I mean. So I don't even know where to start. So I'm going to start rambling, and I might start crying. So feel free to interrupt me in the middle of crying and rambling. But essentially, 52% of the country voted for Brexit. Essentially what happened was that Theresa May and her advisors decided to trigger Article 50 to sort of get on with it, shall we speak, but without really having, shall we say, a clear idea about what Brexit actually would mean, which is quite ironic because at the time all discussions around Brexit were sort of shut down by saying Brexit means Brexit. But what's been very clear over the last 2 weeks is that people only understand what Brexit means since Chequers, really, and even then there's a lot of dispute about it. So all that time when Theresa May and others were saying Brexit means Brexit, I'm not sure that they really did know what Brexit meant. Also, very unfortunately, I think at the time, I think this is going to be one of those very serious moments, a bit like Iraq, shall we say, where I think trust in government in a certain aspect is going to be lost for a long, long time, if forever, where we were basically told as a public, don't worry about it. We know what we're doing. We have these amazing plans, but we can't tell you because it's all in secret. It'll harm our negotiating position. And people sort of pushed back against that and said, well, no, but that was the reply that was given to us. Now, what's become very, very clear this week is that also wasn't true because, obviously what happened at Chequers surprised a lot of people, including, shall we say, the whole of the Department for Exiting the EU, which one wonders what they do now if they weren't involved in the main work of how we're going to leave the EU and how that will all work in the future. So in a sort of very serious sense, one wonders what has been going on over the last year and a half, apart from possibly just internal party management, which is a very sad state of affairs. So just very briefly, I mean, obviously what seemed to have happened at Chequers is the cabinet were basically locked away and said, this is what Brexit means, and this, your choices are, jump off the edge of a cliff, have a rock fall on you, or essentially carry on being a quasi-EU member state without actually having too much say in it. And we're going to go for the quasi-member EU state because the other two options really, really scare us. And if you don't like that, well, have you got a better option? And this is the other sort of sad part of the tale. And ever since we've had Article 50 triggered, one of the things that's really disappointed me is that people have just seemed to fought the referendum every single day, again and again and again. And rather than sort of moving on and figuring out how to make Brexit happen, which is, Brexit's a terribly complicated process and a terribly difficult process. In my job, I deal with the technicalities of some of it. And it is having a whole government system where you've been intertwined with different ways of doing things for 40 years and unravelling it isn't very simple. I mean, when people use World War II rhetoric, it really frustrates me, because actually the real sort of historical comparison in my mind is when Soviet Union fell and communism fell at the end of, you know, the Soviet Union. Because essentially what's happened is a big way of doing government has suddenly fallen away and you need to replace it. Now, that's not simple. And if you do it wrong, you could create anarchy and chaos and problems as they were in Russia. Now, So Theresa May's plan is not very popular with many people, but ultimately, the Brexiteers don't seem to have any real solution. And while they're sort of more pro-Remainers, obviously their solution is stay in. So we're in this sort of situation where everybody is extremely unhappy. Everybody's still shouting at each other. And Theresa May and her team, I suppose, are continuing to go forward in the hope or the belief that essentially because there is no other way, that the way they're suggesting will happen.
I think that's a pretty much where Theresa May's at. I mean, the thing that the Brexiteers don't have going for them is the parliamentary maths. They cannot, the really hard Brexiteers cannot force Theresa May's hand any further, because she knows she's probably got the votes. You know, they can force a vote of no confidence to happen, but she would probably win it. Not because there's massive enthusiasm for Theresa May in the Conservative Party, but because nobody wants what might come next. Their bigger fear is the worse option. When your bigger fear is a worse option than Theresa May, then you know you're a parliamentary party in trouble. But that is, from my understanding, where both sides of them are coming at. So now what we're going to end up with is it's likely that we'll end up with something quite close to what was agreed at Chequers, which is a fairly semi-soft Brexit. It's not completely the soft Brexit that some would like to push towards, where we remain a member of the single market. It's not technically remaining a member of the customs union, though, Nick, you'll have to explain to me the huge difference between a customs partnership and a customs union.
It's about five letters difference. That's about it, really.
Because I know you were very much of the opinion that though you had been a Remainer, you had to leave the customs union as part of Brexit. So it's, I know that, you know, that you will feel that this isn't the Brexit that has been promised. I think it's the Brexit that's going to pass Parliament. And were I a pragmatic Leaver, I think that what I would probably say is, yeah, okay, that's where we need to be now, and then we can push further as time goes on. Were I a pragmatic Remainer, I would probably say, yeah, let's do that and then push for more integration as time goes on. I'm not sure anyone's particularly being pragmatic at the moment, though. Mark, what's your take?
I've been making notes. I don't normally make notes when we do this podcast. I normally just wing it, but I thought I'd make some notes this time. I'm actually on the radio or something. My starting point for where we are now is I'm kind of really struggling to see the point of doing this. Before the referendum, my father-in-law, who I think was minded to vote leave, put it this way, he plays a lot of golf. He spends a lot of time with people who play a lot of golf. I think almost everyone in his golf club voted leave. But he actually sat me down one day a few weeks before the referendum and he said, you've got 3 minutes to persuade me why I shouldn't vote to leave the EU. And I remember what my pitch was. It was, if we vote to leave, what will happen in the end is that we kind of won't be able to really properly leave, because we are so inextricably bound up with the EU and all its institutions, and it would be such a massive shock to the economy if we were to leave, and just no responsible government could ever allow that to happen, that we will end up remaining linked to or part of most of the EU's infrastructure, but we won't be able to have any say. So we'll just be a rule taker, and we'll no longer be a rule maker, and we'll still have to contribute a significant amount of money, and we'll have to follow most, if not all, of the rules. So what's the point? And he voted to remain. I think it's as a result of that conversation, because I don't think he really talked to anyone else about it. So I managed to persuade one person, well, actually two people, because I think my mother-in-law voted Remain as well, because she listened in on that conversation. And I mean, I'm sorry to say that is kind of where we've ended up. I'm a bit ambivalent on it. I am sorry to say, because I really wish we'd voted to Remain. But I am a lot happier now than I was a week ago, because it is becoming clear that we actually are going to remain relatively closely wedded to quite a lot of the EU infrastructure. And I mean, I think that's a good thing. I really struggle to see how our economy will grow and flourish in the coming decades if we aren't linked to the massive economic block that's just on our doorstep. These people who say, oh, just leave. I mean, I'm getting so sick of seeing that. There's been a real dumbing down of debate in the last few years. I mean, we're not going to talk about Trump, even though he's in the country at the moment, because we agreed at the start. But, you know, Trump, Brexit, you know, this whole thing of like, you know, I used to get so sick of people saying, look, it's perfectly simple. This is the answer. Whenever anyone prefaces a tirade with, look, it's perfectly simple, I know it's not going to be perfectly simple, and whatever comes out of their mouth is going to be absolute garbage, probably. The thing is, as you think you've both already alluded to, the parliamentary maths make it very difficult to see how anything other than what May has postulated here gets through. Even what May's postulated might not get through. But the idea that a kind of hard Brexit or some kind of, you know, ignoring the result of the referendum and remaining could get through is just like, there's just not a parliamentary majority for that at all. What I'm actually reminded of a little bit, do you remember about 12 years ago, I think it was Jack Straw, tried to pilot through the House of Commons Lords reform, and there were about five different possible ways in which they were going to reform the Lords, and there was no majority for any one of them. And what we ended up with was the status quo, which is that the Lords wasn't any further reformed. It was left exactly as it was. Now, the problem with this is, what's the default? If you can't get any of these things through Parliament, what is the default? Is it to remain? Is it to leave with no deal? I mean, I don't think either of those things are going to be acceptable to probably most of the country, because if we leave with no deal, that will be catastrophic for the economy. And if we remain, that's completely ignoring what more than half the population voted for. So we're in such a massive bind here. And even if Theresa May was challenged, and even if she lost, I agree with you, I mean, I don't think she would lose. I think she'd win. And then according to the Tory rules, she can't be challenged for another year. So she'd be in until we'd left the EU in March next year. But if she was challenged and was deposed and was replaced with Johnson or Gove or Raab or whoever, they wouldn't have a parliamentary majority to get a harder Brexit through either. It's not like that would solve anything. It wouldn't solve anything at all. So the whole thing is just a total mess.
I mean, that's one of the things I find really interesting about the current debate is how those who, you know, the Brexiteers who talk about the referendum and the will of the people, which is a phrase I hate so much, but they talk about the will of the people, then they ignore the result of the 2017 general election. it really is a very selective will of the people. I mean, if you want to talk truly about what our last two sort of big electoral events meant, A, the referendum meant we leave the European Union, but the general election result showed very clearly that people didn't really know what they wanted from that, because Theresa May's whole pitch of the 2017 general election is give me the majority so I can do a solid good job of leaving. And essentially the country said, we're not sure we trust you to do that, so we're going to create a mixed parliamentary mass system, which is really messing everything up.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. And therefore, let's just hypothesise. What if Theresa May had got a 70 or 100 seat majority? She would have taken that as an absolute message from the electorate that they wanted her to do what she said before and do exactly what she said. The fact that the electorate came back and said, we don't even trust you to have a majority. Now we're going to make you have some kind of coalition stroke supply and confidence agreement with a minor party. And yet she hasn't taken the message from that. Actually, I think given what's happened in the last few days, maybe she had taken the message, but it didn't seem initially like she had. And definitely the hard Brexiteers definitely haven't taken that message. You're right.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Emma Burnell, a political journalist.
Hi, I'm Steve Fielding. I'm Professor of Political History at the University of Nottingham.
And together, we do a monthly podcast called The Zeitgeist Tapes.
During which we talk about a film, TV show, anything to do with culture and its political implications.
We hope you'll enjoy it. Please do look for us on iTunes as The Zeitgeist Tapes. And if you do enjoy it, don't forget to rate and review.
Thank you. So I just want to pick up on something you said, Mark, which I thought was very interesting, is about this sort of dumbing down of debate. So about 6 months, this would be about 6 months ago when the first sort of, shall we say, the backstop agreement was reached in December or so. Soon after that, I attended a local Conservative Association event, and there was somebody there I know who's you know, very senior in a local party, and you know, he's a very much an arch Brexiteer. You know, he's 75 years old. He's a member of the party for years, joined with the young when it was the Young Conservatives, and met his wife through that. And he came up to me and he said, Nick, I'm really worried about Brexit. And there was me thinking, oh, maybe even though he's a Brexiteer, he suddenly realised it's a lot more complicated than he thought, and actually there are sort of deeper consequences, and there isn't a perfect solution. So I said to him, oh, well, really, what are you worried about? And he looked at me and said, I'm worried it won't be hard enough. And that just sort of like stunned me, because obviously that was at the time when Theresa May's rhetoric was at her hardest. And so after a moment's pause, I said to him, so what are you hoping for? And he just looked at me and said, well, I think we should just leave. So normally I'm quite tactful at these type things because I'm a local elected representative. And I just, I couldn't say anything to him apart from, that's mad. I said to him, that's mad. And he looked at me and he said, maybe you're right. I'm going to go off to the buffet now. And that's it. That was the conversation we had about it. So
I've had conversations with people who were very, very, very strongly for leave and actually kind of racist and xenophobic and all the rest of it as well. And every single one of them has been a pensioner with a decent private pension and a decent state pension. And even if the economy was to drop by 20 or 25% over the next few years, they'd be OK. So people like that are completely insulated from the consequences. And I think it's totally irresponsible for people like that to talk about leave. It actually makes me very, very angry because it feels like there actually isn't a proper level of accountability here. These people are able to vote for something that they actually won't have to deal with the consequences of. Me and my son. And you, Nick, and your children will have to deal with it.
Emma, though, what do you think Labour should do? Because I think the 2017 general election result partly gives Labour some responsibility in all of this, not in terms of the result necessarily, the referendum, but you know, Labour have potentially a big say in what happens next.
Well, I think there are two heads that I have in this. One of which is my personal opinion of Brexit and Labour, and I would want Labour to reflect my opinion. But in terms of the politics of it, I think Labour are probably playing a more canny game than most people give them credit for. They are straddling the line between we respect the referendum results and we don't think you're going to come back with a deal we can vote for. So I suspect that what they'll do the six tests, including one of which is it must bring all the benefits of the single market without being in the single market. That's like, I want a unicorn. Yeah, it's not a test that is possible to pass. So I suspect that Labour will continue to sort of basically, Labour's message has been, you wanted Brexit, but we want a Brexit that works for people, a jobs first Brexit. You know, look, Brexit means jobs first Brexit. Because they can, because they are the opposition, and you know, that's what you can do in opposition. And they will vote against the final deal. Now there is some talk of Labour members being peeled off to support whatever Theresa May ends up with. But I can't see enough people doing that without it being so soft a Brexit that it won't. So basically, she'd have to throw in the single market. She'd have to get any Labour member to what would be essentially ending their career and voting with the Tories. If you are going to do that, you will be deselected, or you'd have to step down, and would therefore, I think, have to be able to say it was that big, it made that much difference that I did this, and that for me, I think, is probably only keeping Britain in the single market. I think. that Labour, so politically, I think Labour are doing the right thing. Just there was someone tweeted the other day, oh, why isn't Labour coming out much harder, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, well, look, never interrupt your opponent when they're forming a circular firing squad.
I saw that tweet. That was good.
Yeah. And yeah, Labour are doing the right thing. They're stepping back and letting the Tories tear each other apart. You know, it's not our fight.
However, it did occur to me that there is a golden opportunity for Labour in the next, well, few months, maybe year or two, depending on exactly how this process plays out, where as May's back gets more and more to the wall and it becomes more and more difficult to see how she's going to get this through, what Labour could do is step in and say, look, we think this is as good a deal as we're going to get. We will back you on this deal. And if Labour do that, I think that will wreck the Tory party for the next generation, because they're already massively split on this. And if Theresa May gets her deal through on the back of Labour, the opposition, supporting them, I think, you know, all the stuff that happened post Thatcher and the feelings of betrayal for having had to, you know, for having been defenestrated by the cabinet, I think that will pale into insignificance for the kind of bloodshed, metaphorically, that there will be within the Tory party if May does that.
See, I think Labour can probably have their cake and eat it, ironically, given the Boris is usually the one associated with that.
Boris who? The guy he used
Boris
to
Johnson, sorry, yeah, Boris Johnson. Don't call him Boris. He's not a fucking cartoon, even much as he behaves like one.
Does look like one.
Yeah. So I suspect that what will happen, Labour will vote down the deal first time around, and then Theresa May will have to come back with sweeteners for Labour. So they can do both of those things. They can say this deal is not good enough. Then they can say, but we will ride to the rescue of the government for the good of the country, and destroy the Tory party in the process on a second bite of the cherry. Mm.
So, Nick, are you worried about this? Because this actually, the more I think about it, the more it seems like quite a plausible scenario here. Unless Corbyn decides not to do this because he actually really, really wants to leave. But putting that to one side, if Labour were strategic about this...
Just on that, Corbyn is what I would call a soft Brexiteer, in that he is instinctually a Brexiteer, but he doesn't really care. And he would, if he were given the option of remain and kill the Tory party and or Brexit, he would remain and kill the Tory party every day of the week.
So,
and twice on Sundays.
I mean, do you know what? People have talked about all of this like being Hotel California, you can never leave. I just can't see what is going to happen, because okay, if the scenario that you've been talking about happens, which is very, very possible, what that means is we're basically left in this limbo situation where we're sort of members of the EU but not proper members, but because we can't leave, because we can't agree how to leave, we'll just continue in this current situation, I think. But from a sort of conservative perspective, you know, would in traditional sort of politics, this might cause a general election. Theresa May would say, okay, general election, let's have a general election and decide what's what. But ultimately, I feel so sorry for any Conservative trying to write the manifesto for a Conservative party in the upcoming general election. Because one of the reasons that definitely does keep Theresa May in her role at the moment is because the two different sides know that neither of them has a majority, but they also know that the fight is going to be a fight to the death, really. And essentially to win, they're going to have to cut off a third of the party. and that is just such a horrible place to be. From a sort of practical point of view, and I think this is really important in when we're talking about realignment in politics, the resources, you know, are held basically. You've got two very different places. You've got the big donors who hold like a lot of the financial resources, but then in terms of how the Tory party functions on the ground, you've got the local associations which have quite a lot of autonomy. Now, while quite a lot of the active members are sort of very strong anti, you know, sort of pro-Brexiteers, quite a lot of the voters really aren't as tribal as that. So the idea that, you know, if you had two different Conservative type candidates running in the same seat, I mean, I don't know how that sort of works, really. I mean, you're right, it could get very, very ugly. And at some point, there will have to be a general election. The Conservatives are going to have to cross that bridge, shall we say, of creating a manifesto. And at that point, will we be able to hang together as one party? I do not know.
I mean, I would say to you, Nick, as someone who was going through this 2 years ago, are we going to hang together as a party? Are we going to split? It's an existential thing for a political activist to feel and to have to think about and talk about. Surprising things happen, as you and I both know from last year.
They do, but I think there's a big difference though, Emma, because I think the big difference is the Conservatives are going to have to come up with an answer to a question which you can't fudge. So I think the Labour Party manifesto did a very good job of fudging things by basically chucking the kitchen sink in it and having almost everything and anything. And Labour very much are very good at uniting against a common enemy, which is Conservative Britain sort of thing. But the previous general election, Theresa May said, best Brexit without too much details. But literally, the next manifesto is going to have to come down on what a Brexit deal will look like if we haven't, all this sort of stuff. And I just can't see how we can even fudge that.
Well, I mean, does it? Won't Brexit have happened by then? I mean, isn't the interesting question going to be that Brexit is going to be between elections? There won't be any manifestos.
Well, no, for two reasons. Firstly, it's very possible the scenario you describe means that Brexit won't happen because there'll be no parliamentary majority for any type of it. So we just sort of end up in this limbo. But the second possibility as well is that even if we do Brexit, the sort of future arrangement deal that we talked about can't be signed anyway until after Brexit, because EU laws forbid the EU from signing or even negotiating trade deals with EU countries. So actually, even if this document that was released today, even if Barnier says, OK, it sounds all right, there'll be no legal sort of sign up to it. So at that moment in time, it is very possible that we could have Brexit. The Tory party then, decides to get rid of Theresa May. Then a general election is called. Then, it's a case of, that is their chance to sort of try and stop what is going on. And even if a deal is signed, people will want to undo it. So,
but at least we haven't got the chaos that we would have had if Ed Miliband had been elected. So, there's something that we can all sleep a bit more.
Your choice is strong and stable government with me or chaos under Ed Miliband. How David Cameron has not deleted that tweet.
Wow. He's writing a book, isn't he, at the moment? So that's going to be interesting.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, I'm sure that won't throw a spanner in any works.
I mean, how can he write that book without crying? I mean, I'm sure I can just imagine him having conversations with his book agent, oh, that's fantastic. I mean, fantastic. Thank you for doing 20,000 words about big society. When are you going to start writing about the referendum?
So, David Cameron, you were the most unsuccessful prime minister ever. Tell us about that.
So, anyway. So yeah, I am. Do you know what? I am really. I just don't know what's going to happen. And when I challenge people on this, they'll say to me, but the Conservative Party is the most successful party ever, and it always sticks together. I'm like, yeah, but that just because that's always happened doesn't mean it's going to happen over this.
It's like I saw a wonderful cartoon. Sadly, it was before the 2016 American election, which was X. We have never done X. So it's like we'd never elected a black president. We'd never done, and you did. And so the point was, therefore, we could elect a woman. Turns out that was the bit that was beyond. But historical precedent, particularly in this kind of time, is just no guide to anything.
Yeah, and I've learned that the hard way. Going on the radio, and the amount of times when you're kind of a amateur political commentator as I am, and you get asked, so what's going to happen with this? What's going to happen with that? And, I used to make predictions, and it was based on pretty sound reasoning of 25 years worth of very closely following politics and understanding the undercurrents and the tectonic plates and all of that. And it just means nothing now. Nothing. Like, we've been talking here for the last half an hour about, what's been going on and what might happen. I wouldn't be surprised if any of the things that could happen here. Maybe both parties will split. Maybe, maybe another party will emerge and they will have the majority within a few years. I mean, I know our electoral system is designed to try and prevent that from happening. But God only knows what's going to happen. We are in such uncharted waters here that I think anyone who tries to make any sort of firm predictions here is, you know, is on a hiding to nothing. It's a crazy time. And what is most surprising about this, I think, is that it is the Conservative Party that has caused this to happen. You know, the party who is supposed to be about stability, about not changing things, about keeping things the way they are. And they're the ones who have got us into this mess. It's bizarre.
Yeah. Just gone completely headbanging. Well, and the same thing in America. Conservative doesn't really mean conservative anymore.
No, it means right-wing lunatic, as far as I can tell. Like, did some of the... we weren't going to talk about Trump, maybe. But some of the stuff that's just happening in America now is just astonishing. Yeah. The world's largest...
I'm afraid that neither we nor our listeners have time for us to each have our own individual and very similar, I suspect, rants about Trump. Yeah. But despite Nick's belief that I shouldn't be there, I will be out banging my saucepan later today as you listen to this podcast. And making myself heard, in my opinion, of whether Donald Trump rolled out his red carpet.
I'll be eating ice cream in the garden, which I think is a lot better way of spending my time.
I'm being with my mum. It'd be brilliant. I'm going dressed as the Offred from the Handmaid's Tale. I can't wait.
That actually does sound quite fun.
Great. Well, on that lovely note of consensus, I'm going to call it a day. The long and short of it, listeners, is we don't know either. Nobody does. Happy Brexit.
Yeah, but please do listen again in the future, though, still.
Yeah.
Please do
tune in for us not knowing next week.
We might not know what's going on, but neither does anyone else. So we'll just...
Yeah, we're the honest podcast.
Yeah. There you go. thank you very much to Nick and to Mark for joining me.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure, as always.
And thank you to Kevin McLeod at incompetech.com for our theme tune. And this has been a Political Human production.